The official results from the Turkish election are in. And for the presidency, it's been too close to call. None of the candidates got 50%, so they're back to a runoff next weekend. And after the devastating series of earthquakes that hit Turkey in February this year and the anger over the poor building standards and the lackluster government response in many areas, and despite the polls suggesting that a change of government might be in the wind, it will be President Erdogan and his main challenger, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, who face off next weekend in that runoff election. In the first round of voting, human rights groups did raise some concerns about government efforts to curb criticism on social media as part of a general concern about the freedom of speech within Turkey. The opposition has since lodged complaints about some discrepancies in the vote count. What's likely to happen then in the runoff? Why hasn't the earthquake ended President Erdogan's long rule of Turkey? And what are the broad concerns about human rights in the country? To tell us more, we have Emma Sinclair Webb. She's the Turkey director for the NGO Human Rights Watch, and she's joining us from Istanbul. Emma, thank you so much for joining us, and welcome to Nightlife.
Thank you.
So I gather that the results have been certified today. What's the latest in the election?
Well, the latest is that the final results for the presidential election have been published. We're still waiting for the results for the members of parliament election, because it's both parliamentary and presidential at the same time. So we've got the presidential result, the final result. No one made it to the 50% mark. And the 50% mark is, that's the cutoff. You have to get an absolute majority to be able to become president. So we're going to have a runoff on Sunday, on the 28th, to decide who's president. But so far, Recep Tayyip Erdogan has 49.5% of the vote. So he only needs to get 0.5% more to become president. And his rival, his main rival, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, got 44.8%. And there's one extra other candidate who got just over 5%. And that other candidate, who's been billed as the kind of kingmaker, Sinan Oğan is his name, where his votes go will determine the result.
Was this a surprise that Erdogan did so well, I guess, given the controversies? Certainly this was being reported in the lead-up, as far as I saw, as the best chance to unseat him in quite some time.
Well, yes. I mean, this basically all the polls, the opinion polls that were put out before the election seemed to show that his rival, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, had a narrow victory chance over him. And that didn't come to pass. So people were surprised. Erdogan's been around for 20 years. He's an extremely robust politician who really needs to fight, who knows how to fight the fight. And yes, he's come out again on top so far. We'll see what happens on Sunday. We can't predict the result, but he's got so far a huge advantage.
What's your perception, and what's the perception of international experts, of the integrity of the election in Turkey?
Well, we had a lot of concerns in advance of this election that, there would be sort of trickery around social media. We were particularly concerned that social media could get censored, suppressed, or throttled. Internet could get throttled. Now, that did not come to pass, in fact. There were a lot of other concerns expressed about the count and whether, the ballots, whether there was vote rigging in some places, whether there was fraud. Now, there were a number of appeals by both the main opposition party, which is the Republican People's Party, and a small pro-Kurdish party called the Green Left Party. Both parties appealed against certain results in certain ballot boxes. But all in all, the Green Left Party said, we've appealed in over 1,000 ballot boxes and things have been put right. And basically this isn't enough to change the distribution of seats to members of parliament. So neither of the two main parties have suggested that, vote rigging was definitively, went against them, or that the final results will be changed. So far, we've not had proof that this has not that this has been a rigged election. But there are still continuing discussions, especially on social media, about whether, you know, why in some ballot boxes there was an extremely high turnout over the turnout, you know, extra votes were counted in certain ballot boxes. Now, why is that? We don't fully know. It could be that police and members of the security forces use their votes in those ballots. Some people have suggested there's been repeat voting. People have used their vote more than once. None of this is proven. None of it's proven. So at the moment, we're proceeding on the version that, you know, this has been largely without problems, and not problems that could change the overall result, at least. But until the final results are published of the parliamentary election, we won't fully know. And we're expecting those, you know, any moment now. They get published in an official journal called the Official Gazette. That's where it's sort of the final vote count by the higher election regulating body gets published. And so that's what we're waiting for. But right now, it looks like out of 600 members of parliament, about 322 go to the ruling bloc, and that's Erdogan and those in coalition with him, which is a far-right party and two Islamist parties, very quite fringe Islamist parties. So 322 out of 600, they've got the majority. And that probably won't change much. So then the others, you know, come in below that, and the opposition didn't prevail.
Erdogan will survive, presumably, as president, given the results, but also have his allies in the parliament, as you say. This election, of course, took place in the context of the shocking series of earthquakes in February, with extensive deaths following that, and the reaction to the earthquake was perhaps one of the reasons why it was suggested that there might be finally a change of government in Turkey. Can you give us a sense of what that meant, what the aftermath of the earthquake is like in the mind of voters as they went to the polls, and why perhaps they didn't decide to change government at this time, if that's what's actually happened?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. I think a lot of commentators thought an earthquake of that scale, which exposed enormous corruption in the building industry, failure to build to proper standards in law, and also lots and lots of amnesties for contractors. So even when irregular building had happened, it got pardoned over the years. And clearly, the whole earthquake exposed the sort of catalogue of state failure at every level, that, you know, there's kind of widespread impunity for bad building standards, there's not proper inspection, municipalities don't do a proper inspection, the ministry responsible for building doesn't do proper inspection. So you would have thought that all of this together would be enough to really change public opinion in Turkey, especially in the earthquake areas, against the government. But actually, what I found going to the area was that, talking to many people, is that those who already voted for President Erdogan, even where they had lost a large number of relatives and really lost all their possessions and were having to start a new life, were still saying, well, you know, we prefer to stick with Erdogan, who we know. We prefer to stick with our president. So I did hear that view voiced by people. I didn't know how much it would play out, of course, in the election. But what seems to have happened broadly is that people stuck to the politics they already knew. Erdogan's vote did go down a bit in the earthquake, in some of the earthquake areas, which are real Erdogan strongholds, by the way, but not enough to affect his chances of victory overall. And that is perhaps, for people, a very surprising fact, but I think what it shows is that, you know, in the very polarized climate that we have in Turkey, people largely on both sides stick to the party they know, and it becomes almost like, you know, support for, it's quite tribal, and I think it's tribal in many countries. It's not this isn't typical for Turkey only. This is something to do with the age we live in, which is an age of populist politics. And Erdogan plays right populist politics very, very well.
It's Nightlife around Australia on ABC Radio. My name is Dom Knight, and our guest is Emma Sinclair-Webb, Turkey director for Human Rights Watch based in Istanbul. We're talking about the election. The results have just been, I guess, certified or published officially, and President Erdogan, the incumbent, just under 50%, so there'll be a runoff next weekend, and it seems fairly likely that he will prevail there. And I guess, Emma, there are two tensions in this election, looking at the earthquake that we know about from other elections, perhaps. And you mentioned people sticking with who they know, and that is such a common thing, particularly after a great disaster and a great challenge. People do become conservative, I guess, in their voting, versus the surge of anger that many predicted following the earthquake, and the finger pointing at the poor building regulations and flaws in the response. What was Erdogan's pitch to the people of Turkey for another term after 20-odd years?
Well, the other thing we should add here as well is that, you know, huge economic crisis in Turkey where people have got much poorer. And we've had the middle classes in Turkey really see their income drop tremendously. They've become declassed, if you like. I mean, they're no longer middle class in any sense. Poverty threshold and hunger threshold has gone up. The percentage of people at that threshold have gone up enormously. So despite all that, he prevailed. I think in his election campaign, he played a very classic right populist campaign style, which was very divisive. It pointed to the opposition as people who work with terrorists. He completely used this word terrorism to scare the population. You know, this is an unreliable opposition coalition of six different parties who are prepared to talk to the Kurds, but not just talk to the Kurds, talk to terrorists. And this was played out all through the campaign. The other kinds of polarizing discourses we saw were around LGBT people. He particularly used LGBT rights as a wedge issue. And by that, I mean, he would say, you know, those oppositionists, that Kılıçdaroğlu supports LGBT people. We support the Turkish family. It's them versus us. And this them versus us, very homophobic discourse, I'm afraid, you know, took up a lot of oxygen in the campaign. Now, I'm not saying that people were necessarily won over by anti-LGBT discourse, homophobic discourse as such. But what it amounts to is, you know, the use of a series of ingredients like that, terrorism and playing on family values, to kind of scare people into sticking with what they know. Stick with us. We're the reliable party that you know. We're the local party. Those oppositionists are somehow foreign to this country. And it was an extraordinary divisive discourse. But the opposition, by contrast, tried to actually, you know, in a very good way, steer away from that populist discourse and used a discourse more based on concepts like, you know, rights, justice, you know, equality, and law, rule of law. Now, one of their particular things was to do this sort of putting two hands together in a heart shape. That became their sort of symbol. All the opposition coalition party, the coalition alliance of opposition parties together. But actually, it's quite a mismatch, if you look at it, between a very divisive discourse by Erdogan and then this very sort of quite soft anti-populist discourse of the opposition. And I think what's really interesting is before the runoff on Sunday, they've changed that discourse. The opposition now have gone for a much harder competing populist discourse. They're now focusing on Erdogan's, what they claim is his failure over refugees. They say that Turkey has too many refugees, that we want to send these refugees back to where they're from. You know, another classic kind of populist discourse is now being used by the opposition against Erdogan.
All right. So they've flipped around, and instead of arguing for rights and equality, they're trying a different strain of populism. The anti-LGBTQI plus rhetoric is reminiscent of what's happening in the American election, where Ron DeSantis, the likely Republican candidate governor of Florida, is making similar kinds of arguments and talking about the family. What are Human Rights Watch's major concerns with the Erdogan regime? Do you share the criticisms levelled by the opposition?
Well, absolutely. I mean, there's been an enormous rollback on human rights in Turkey over the last decade, especially over the last decade. And, you know, what does this consist of? Well, it consists of basic, you know, huge government control over media. And I think this is, we have to factor this into the election result too, that most people get their news from television. But most television news in Turkey is either directly controlled by the government or directly controlled by companies that are very close to the government and will do the government's bidding. So you only get news according to what the government, what Erdogan wants you to see. Now, of course, there are some minor TV channels also where you can watch more kind of impartial, independent TV news, but they're in the minority. So if you think about it, people all day are, you know, get this message from Erdogan of what his line is on everything, which basically excludes the opposition. And I think the divisiveness of the whole campaign has been played out in a much, in a longer term through the media. So, you know, there is a lot of manipulation of media. That's why social media is so important. And that's why, too, the government brought in another concern of ours. The government brought in enormous restrictions on social media, where they can order the takedown of content they don't like or that opposes the government line, that is critical of Erdogan himself or his family. And we've seen enormous takedown, number of takedown requests of websites, blocking orders on tweets, Facebook postings. And so there's a lot of censorship on social media too, because that's the place where debate is freer. Another big human rights concern for us at Human Rights Watch and for, and has been for the opposition too, is the independence of the judiciary. In Turkey, you've got a situation where the government is really has enormous control over the courts. And that means that the government has been using the courts to lock up opponents, to go after journalists, to detain human rights defenders, and really to clamp down too with criminal prosecutions on opponents that they find threatening. So this is a very troublesome picture for us, troubling picture, to see that, you know, it's very hard to get a fair trial in Turkey. It's another huge area that we were been arguing for a long time needs to change. You need to have a much more independent court system where you can get proper independent deliberations by courts, not just government orders played out in court judgments. So, you know, those are two very big areas. If a government controls most of the media and the judicial system, you know, you are in trouble. And then this fundamentally erodes democratic norms, because even if democracy is played out during elections, everyone can go to the polls, they can vote. The rest of the time, you've got this enormous anti-democratic form of governance, which is controls all parts of life. And it's an enormously centralized presidential system that Turkey has. President Erdogan himself has enormous powers, which he gave himself back in 2017, when he had a referendum to create a super presidency. And this basically diminished parliamentary authority and put all the authority in the hands of the presidency. And that's what we've been seeing played out for the last few years. And it really means that it is hard to claim any election is fair, because there's an extremely uneven playing field in Turkey to begin with.
Emma Sinclair Webb's joining us from Istanbul. She's Turkey Director for Human Rights Watch. Dom Knight is my name. This is ABC Radio across Australia. And I guess in that context, Emma, given the enormous power that President Erdogan has, the control of the narrative in the media and the judiciary and so many aspects of everyday life, to not get 50% of the initial vote, I guess, is quite an extraordinary thing. And you mentioned that there weren't any major concerns about the legitimacy of the election. But nevertheless, with such a, I guess, with the deck so firmly stacked in his favour, is it a rebuke of sorts to him not to get 50% in the first vote?
Yes, I think it shows that, you know, I think in many ways the opposition has done tremendously well, given the situation that the country is in. And given the huge centralized power that operates in Turkey via the presidency. So, yes, I think it is. They have done quite well. I think it is interesting to think about other countries where you have similar authoritarian regimes. And Turkey does not resemble those countries. It doesn't resemble Russia, doesn't resemble Azerbaijan, because it has this enormous political opposition. And these elections, I think, haven't managed to get rid of this opposition. This opposition is still going to be there at the end, whoever prevails on the final runoff on Sunday. Of course, it's stacked in Erdogan's favour, but that opposition won't go away, and the people that voted for it won't go away either. So you have a very interesting map of Turkey. When you look at the map, largely it's the coastal areas to the west and Istanbul and the big cities that are very supportive of the opposition. Whereas the interior of Turkey, central Anatolia, also the Black Sea area, is largely supportive of Erdogan. So you've got quite a geographic split within the country. And of course, the Kurdish areas of the country, the mainly Kurdish southeastern, eastern provinces, have very much supported this party, a pro-Kurdish party called the Green Left Party. But they also, those areas, supported the candidacy of Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, he was the candidate for the opposition in the presidency. And he got enormous support in the Kurdish area too. So it's a very interesting map of Turkey emerges, and it's very stark, actually, this. And that I don't expect to change, whatever the result in the coming days. I think that opposition will continue to exist. It won't go anywhere. What's surprising, perhaps, is for people is, how little, the fact that the huge economic crisis that the country faces has not played out against Erdogan more than it did. Because Erdogan is responsible, after all, for a very unorthodox economic policy in the country, which is to keep interest rates low, which has basically triggered enormous inflation in the country and massive devaluation of the Turkish lira against the dollar, which means that, every day, every week, prices in the shops go up. Basic foodstuffs are becoming more and more expensive, and people have become poorer and poorer.
One of the great debates, I guess, in Turkish politics has been accession to the EU. But with President Erdogan likely to return, is this likely to be off the table, do you think, while he remains in control of the country, in particular with the limits on rights that his regime has placed?
Well, I think that's, unfortunately, the EU is also has a big role in this. One of the EU's main changes of direction with Turkey has been about refugees. Turkey has been a candidate for EU membership for the last couple of decades. And basically, there's been no progress towards that membership happening under Erdogan's government. Though there were initial reforms to satisfy the possibility of candidacy and become a candidate for membership. Now, what then happened is after the war in Syria took off, there were a huge number of refugees had to escape the war in Syria and come to Turkey. And Turkey has officially 3.7 million Syrian refugees. The European Union panicked about these refugees coming to Europe, and it drew up a deal with Turkey in 2016, which basically said, in return for large payments of money, you will keep the refugees in Turkey. They should not have an onward journey into the EU. And basically, this has reset the relationship between the EU and Turkey into a very transactional one, with centered around migration control. Of course, we see it played out in lots of places in the world. And this isn't new, but it has meant that the possibility of EU membership has completely receded. It's totally on the back burner, not just because of human rights, but also because the EU's relationship with Turkey is largely based around migration control and keeping refugees out. And this has given President Erdogan huge power to use refugees in a way as a pawn in any dialogue with the EU. The threat of sending refugees to the EU has always been one that's come up, recurred from time to time from the president. And it's a very instrumental and unpleasant use of people who are vulnerable. The most vulnerable people in Turkey are refugees. They don't have citizenship. They don't have a prospect of becoming fully accepted refugees because Turkey has a very strange policy on refugees. It doesn't actually consider them refugees. It regards them as sort of in a limbo state. They have a temporary status in Turkey. But that's become one of the big issues between the EU and Turkey, and I expect that to carry on being a big issue.
Sounds like it's a mutually cosy situation at the moment. If he's able to use them as a threat potentially and get money from the EU, and the EU is able to not deal with the problem by paying to keep these refugees in Turkey. Sounds like there's quite a lot for Human Rights Watch to keep an eye on there in Turkey. Emma, thank you very much for talking us through the election results. We'll look forward to seeing what happens next weekend in the runoff.
Thank you very much.
Emma Sinclair-Webb there, Turkey Director for Human Rights Watch, based in Istanbul.